nobody really understands me, and that's a very, very deep topic, because a lot of us feel asked this question on a daily basis. How do you feel about this question? Is this something you've encountered before?
I used to say this all the time, last year.
What about this year? What changed this year?
Oh, I said it at the start of the year, but then I realized that the people can't possibly understand me unless they're me.
What do you mean by that? People can't possibly understand you unless they're you?
Well, unless I sit down and even if I sit down with someone and go, this is how I feel, they'll never, I've lived that experience. Whereas I'm talking to someone who's never lived that experience, and I'm trying to get them to understand something they've never experienced.
Yeah.
So
you're trying to get somebody to understand an experience they've never experienced.
Yeah. Something they've never experienced.
And so that's usually what causes us to ask question like, does anybody ever understand me?
Yeah. Or when people feel left out, or they feel like they don't belong, they feel like, oh, no one understands me. So I've heard that a few times.
And I think the question I asked last week was, when we ask about things like understand me, what do people really want understanding on? Because I feel like whenever the question is asked, it's never followed through. We go as far as understand me, but nobody really knows what you really want them to understand.
I think people, when it comes to some situations, people want, sometimes it's validation for someone to say, yeah, I understand what you're going through. It validates their emotions.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think that's what happens.
But if we're talking about the validation of emotion, and so someone coming in and saying, I want you to understand me, is validating an emotion an understanding of somebody? I feel like not essentially, because I remember when I was in these times here, though you want your emotions to be validated, but you still don't feel understood, but it's a sense of, yes, someone understands, but deep down, you know nobody understands what you're going through. So what's the validation all about? Is it a relief? Is that a... See, this is tough. We've got to really think about, why do we seek validation? What does that do? Does that put us on a common line with everybody? But then if you think validation puts you on a common line with anybody, and then you also say nobody understands you, isn't that contradictory?
I think the validation part comes from when you're not secure within yourself about a situation or something that's going on. You go to someone hoping that you want to be right,
yeah,
but you're not secure in that, in telling yourself that you're right. So you go to someone else and you go, don't you think it's this way? You know, like, because, you know, I've done this and this, and you're expecting that yes. Do you know what I mean? Them saying yes would be, okay, I must be right because they validated me.
Yeah.
But then there's a lack of understanding. It's not about... When a person wants validation, I don't think they look for understanding.
Yeah.
They don't want someone to understand. They want someone to be like, yeah, you're right. Like, it's good that, you know, you have a right to feel like that. But when we look at understanding, it's separate.
Yeah. That's where I was getting onto, because I couldn't see any form of understanding from a validation. Validation doesn't bring forth an understanding, but it brings a sense of false security, which allows us to push further on whatever we're doing, to feel like, okay, if I'm not the only one that feels this way, even though what I'm doing may be right or wrong, I should be able to push forward onto it. And so if we're to tap into this question, even on nobody understands me, does this happen in all senses? Would this happen to a leader, for example? Because sometimes we think this only happens to those who are weak in mind and so forth. But would this happen to someone in a position of leadership, to a person that's running a company, to a person that has a brand new idea and is trying to get people on board?
Yes, it would happen to leaders as well, because we look at the Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
People thought it was crazy to, you know, develop an iPhone, a phone that is full touchscreen. We look at, I don't know who developed the plane, but imagine back then people, you're telling people, I'm going to develop something that flies in the sky.
Yeah.
People didn't understand them, but they pursued anyway.
So in a sense, if we look at those guys' story, it's an interesting thing, because if they seeked out for validation when an idea came up, then those ideas couldn't come to pass. It couldn't. So if they were waiting for somebody to understand what's going through themselves and through their mind, then nothing will come to pass. And so this question of nobody understanding me is a question we all ask ourselves. People of all different levels, those who are higher ups and those who are even low in a mental state, and those who are experiencing all sorts of experience, because now we think and we say, all right, we know that leadership and producing or developing anything is not a one-man job, because it will take a toll on one man. And we also know that there's a need for a team to advance. But at the starting point, it's almost as if there is no team at the starting point. Because when you come up with a new initiative, a new idea, when you're thinking about changing your life from the negative to the positive, when you're thinking of shifting from one sort of way of thinking to a new way of thinking, at that very point of mind, no one's going to understand what you're trying to do. And that's the heartbeat. The heartbeat is when it comes to shifting from an idea into bringing it into manifestation, from a state of mind into a better state of mind, that's where we struggle. We struggle when it comes to shifting, because the time it comes to shifting, we held back because we are waiting for a form of validation. We are waiting for somebody else that believes in the same thing we believe, somebody else that has a similar idea or see the same future and results as we do. And what that does is it stops us from taking a step forward, because a leap of faith sometimes requires one man and one man only. Someone's got to start the leap.
Yeah, like, because everyone's unique and everyone has their own, like, purpose and parts to play in this world. And so you can't expect someone to understand your vision, because their vision might be different, or they don't even have a vision. So it starts with you, and you have to believe it yourself, and you have to give yourself, you have to know, like, your why you're doing this, and why you believe it in your vision and stuff like that. Because if you don't believe in your own vision later on in the future and stuff like that, when time goes forward, they're not going to believe it also. So it all starts with you and how much you believe in your own vision.
So in a sense, you have to persist in your vision and not wait on a team to come carry you. But that's the danger of also having a vision, is because if you persist in a vision of your own and you push forward, there's got to be a time where you got to build a team around it. And you've got to not get people that understand you, but you got to get people that see the same vision you see. And so this is the tricky bit. How do you shift from taking a leap of faith because the idea was seen by you, into the point where you're now delegating and getting a team with a similar vision, pursuing that vision? That's the hard bit there. Because if we wait on somebody to understand us, then we never take a leap. But then once we take a leap, we kind of have to now wait on people to jump on to support us. Because leadership is not a one-man team. And so it's a very tricky bit that a lot of people give up on their vision and their dreams because they have yet caught an understanding of this very conundrum. It's mind-blowing. You can never lead in one man. You can start as one man, you cannot stay one man. If anything big will require different hands. It will always require different hands. Steve Jobs started by himself, but look at Facebook. Look at how many people are in and out. He couldn't do it by himself. He couldn't do all that by himself.
Steve Jobs is Apple. Mark Zuckerberg is the Facebook.
Is Facebook. Yeah, so Steve Jobs is separately, but even Adam started by himself. He got the vision, and then they had to check in Eve.
I would say to meet the right person or to be around the right person, it starts with you have to be that right person, and God will provide other people with the gift, their own gift that you need to work around. So everyone plays a part in creating one big picture of that vision.
Yeah.
So it is goes to faith and stuff like that, but I do believe that you just do your part, control your part, and God provides the rest of it.
Yeah, like when they talk about the body of Christ, you know, like you need, say, like with a hand, kind of you need like five functioning fingers, and yeah. they're all useful, but yeah, they all work together to play, that one. They all play their role towards the same vision.
That's interesting. And if we go back to the main question of nobody understanding me, which is a question we've now, or a statement, I would say, that we realize people of all different walks of life ask themselves this very question every day. People want to be understood emotionally. They want to be understood business-wise in the vision, where they're going. They want to be understood in the acts they're doing. They want to be understood, especially when they're shifting and transforming themselves from one state to another, when they're changing their life from what it used to be to what it's going to be. At that point of time, everybody cries with this very statement. Can anybody understand what I'm doing? And now we see that it's a very tricky situation because when you're shifting or you're taking a leap of faith to go into a different realm that you've never been in before, no one will understand you. But then when you get there and you spied out the land and you've started inhabiting that land on your own, now you need the functional fingers, we'll call it, to step in. And so in a sense, it's almost a very interesting way of the way life works. You start with nobody understanding you, so then you take a leap of faith and you say, okay, I'm going to tackle this situation on my own and push forward. I'm going to push on the vision on my own. And then when you get to a certain point of a vision, you've got to stop and say, now it's time for me to get other people in the same vision. Well, then, when I turn back and try to get other people in the same vision, I got to get people that understand the vision. So then you almost go back to the original state of nobody understands me again. Because as you're seeking to get people in the team to push the vision, because the vision can never be ran by one man alone. Then now Adam needed a helper that is compatible to him. It wasn't any helper.
But what if you can't find someone compatible to help you with the vision?
Well, guess what Adam did? The scripture speaks of Adam going out in the garden in the search of a comparable mate. So Adam went through a search. That's very interesting. He went through a search after looking out at everything that was there. He couldn't find anybody that was comparable.
What I just heard you say was he was intentionally seeking help.
Yeah, he was. The scripture speaks of him intentionally doing that.
What you're saying, because my perspective was that my vision will be fulfilled by me and me only. Like, people will come along the way, but like, at the end of the day, it was just me. But what you're saying is that you need other people.
It's an interesting cycle. Of it takes the leader to lead, and the best way to lead is to lead with your own life. So you must take the leap and jump forward. Make the first step, the second step, the third step. Well, I can't tell you which number of steps you got to stop. When do you stop? Do you stop at the fifth step? Do you stop at the tenth step? When do you stop and say, all right, my bit is done here. Now it's time for a team. Because there's only so much. Let's put it in a mathematical term. If one person can do two things, two people, four. Three people, that's eight. And so we can keep going so and so on. And so now we're put in a situation where we're understanding that this question of nobody really understands me comes in all different walks of life. It's almost a prerequisite for every leader, for every decision, essentially. I won't even say every leader. Every decision you make would put you through the lens of this very question. This will cross your mind. Every major decision you make in your life, this statement must cross the mind. I'm about to make a big decision. You're going to look at the close ones. Is anybody close to me understand me? I'm about to change the way I live my life. Is the people around me going to understand the changes I made? Well, then if I seek for them to understand me, then I lose the vision as a whole.
And what if someone takes the opposite and goes, I do it all by myself? Then what happens?
In a sense, it's a cycle. That's what I was telling you, that you must do it all by yourself to begin with.
This person has decided that in the long run, they're going to do it all by themselves. So,
well, then the next question shouldn't be what's going to happen. The next question should be, how long would the run be? In the long run, how long would the run be if it's just the one man? How long would the run be? When do you get puffed out and exhausted and give up? Wow.
Are you asking because you said, like, do you want to achieve your vision by yourself?
Mike.
I had that mindset until right now. So now it's really, there's a battle going on in my mind right now, and that's why it doesn't,
I'll just add, for me, like, I believe there is part where you play yourself, but to be really great and successful, you have to serve the people around you.
What if you're serving, but you're serving by yourself, whereas I'm going to do it. I'm going to serve others through what I do, but it's me doing everything. What if you're scared to, like, get a team?
Well, that's the insecurity thing right there, that gap.
Whereas, like,
maybe is it trust? Or
yeah, like, because when I do it, like, I do it.
I do it the best way. Nobody else do it the way I do it.
No, no. But, like, I just, no. It's not that. It's just, like, it'll get done. I don't have to be like, oh, can you do this? Or do, like, it'll get done. See, that's where my mind is at the moment. So can someone help
so I
me?
Have, so I'm just imagining this Olympic runner, you know? Like, she wants to win the gold medal. But she doesn't get everything that comes with it, like the training. Like, she's not a pro trainer. Like, she's not a professional about the muscles in her body. She just wants to run. So she needs a professional trainer to help her to do that, to achieve her goal. And then she'll need, like, and then you'll have, like, the physio people there to, like, you know, there's, like, even the joints and stuff you got to take care of, and your diet and the environment. Like, a lot of people, like, specialize in different things to help you achieve that one. Because if you do it by yourself, you're not going to get as far as, like, there's no growth, per se. I guess expanding who you are. Like that?
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone who's ever, like, won something, like, individually, the first thing they always congratulate is usually their team behind them. Like, you know, an individual wins an award, and the first thing they go up there and they congratulate their team. And when, you know, he's just the face of what has happened all in the background. Have you seen that Snoop Dogg thing where he's like, I want to thank myself for, oh, like, look so.
Yeah, Bible verse, two is better than one. And then there's another one about iron sharpening iron. So,
what if you have a fear of forming a team? Like, for example, if you have a vision, yeah, I'm happy to help you with your vision.
Yeah.
But when I have a vision, like, I get, I'm being honest here, and I get, like, there's a fear of, like, there is a fear. And that's why I think, I was thinking that, okay, if I do this all by myself, it's going to be right. Whereas if I get a team, I'm like, oh, what if this person doesn't do the do you know what I'm saying? That's what goes through my head when I think of team. Is it a leap of faith that I need to take in that sense, and just, I have my idea, it's been established, now I need to just put it together with
the, let's go back to the example Bernadette gave about a runner. Let's say this. So the runner is, their vision is to win the gold medal in the Olympics. Well, the physio, his vision could be to help a runner win the gold medal. So he's known as the best physio. Well, that's his vision. Well, he can't get his vision done unless the runner is also getting their vision done. So if vision cannot come to pass unless Adam's also is in his vision. So it all interconnects. And so when we see big corporations and companies coming together and succeeding, is because multiple people have the vision, but they've submitted their vision to the main vision, which brings everybody's vision to pass. Well, then one person wants to be the greatest performer in the world. He stands on stage and he performs. But for him to perform, he's got to get a drummer that has a similar vision as well. He wants to be the best drummer to ever perform live. Well, then so the drummer is achieving his vision while the singer is also doing the same. Now, when the two come together, they have a common vision. They both want to be great. Even though one wants to be great at singing, another wants to be great at drumming. But they're sharing the same stage. Well then, the hard question should it be, do I need people? Should be, how do I find people of similar vision? That's the trouble Adam had when he searched and searched and could not find anything that was comparable to him. Mike.
How do you find people with the similar vision?
You already know it. Like attracts like. You know, when you become something, you start to attract what you become. And then, you know, people of similar mindsets start to come into your life. And it's your challenge to see how you use these individuals to your vision. How you can turn and twist and direct everyone towards your vision.
Because, like, if you know your vision, your purpose, and you're taking actions towards it, you are, yeah, like Cody said, you're attracting. Because, like, you know, if you know what you want to do, you know what to say yes and no to. Especially people, how much time you give to certain people, and with knowledge and stuff, you pick it up. Oh, this person, I'm into business, this person mentioned about business, there's a bigger connection there. But if someone is like wants to go a different career path, you can't relate to it. That already like create a gap automatically on like how much time you talk to that person. You know what I mean?
So what about the case where I've seen people of similar vision, they're both aiming towards the right thing.
Sorry.
However, the two just can't work together.
How?
What do you mean by one person? Finish that one person's sentence.
I thought you were about to say, like, when two people have a similar vision, and then one person reaches out and the person at the time goes, no, I'm doing it by myself.
Yeah, that happens. And that's essentially what I was trying to say.
Like attitude problem towards one another?
I wouldn't say attitude, but it just doesn't click. This person wants to get here. This person also wants to get there. You both know you're aiming towards the right way, and this happened to me multiple times. You both know you're aiming towards the right way. You know this person can give great value to you, and they know you'll give great value to them, but nothing just works out. And so now you feel like you're putting more effort trying to keep the flow of the relationship going than actually getting anything done.
Was it last week we said if we are forcing more, like, taking action to our own hands, we're doing it wrong. Is this all about surrender? If a puzzle piece don't connect, just don't force it. Because, like, if where does your vision come from? If it's from God, then you don't have to worry about the back, like, what the out of control. It's just all about faith.
But say, for example, you're going and, like, you're liking, you're enjoying what you're doing. It's, you know, it's effective. But at the time, you don't see the need for a team. You're sort of managing everything. And then someone reaches out and goes, hey, I'm doing this thing, you know, double exposure. But then you turn around and you go, no, because, like, but then you get a conviction after and you sort of go, hey, this person was actually trying to help me. So what do you do then?
What I believe in is if you don't see it, don't get into it. It is one thing to take a step because another person believes in something. And it's one thing to take a step when you believe in something. That's the struggle we all face when it comes to even parenting and our parents. They might believe in a certain thing and they will say, parody, do it so and so, and earth, do it so and so. But if that's not what you believe in, that can convince you while you're young. But the moment you get a chance, you get out of it, because your faith is not there, your belief system is not there. And so we have practice and we have belief. And what happens is belief will always win. Whatever you believe in will always excel towards the end. And that will always win. And no matter how much practice you try to do in something, if you don't believe in what you do, you will never succeed. And it will, and matter of fact, you'll be a hassle. You'll be a trouble for the team. And that's why we see a lot of problems with companies, where we get people that are solely interested in making money and not the vision of the team. And so they come in the team solely for the purpose of making money. And so what happens? They create a horrible atmosphere for the team, because they're not seeing the end results. Their idea is, let me just get myself on the gate. Let me just get what is possible for myself. Well, if you cannot see what is possible for everybody else, then don't include yourself with everybody else until you can see it. It is better to have no team member than have a team member that hates to be where it is. And that's a great lesson there. That's a great lesson there.
Going back to what Sizzle said before, I had a similar situation and I was unsure of it, but I decided to take a leap of faith and just to check it out, what this person said they were trying to help me with something, and it turned out to be way better than I actually thought it was going to be. So, but even at that time, I had doubts and I was really skeptical and stuff like that, but someone said something to me at the right time, saying, if you don't like it, you always can just, you will know. And then if it's like not meant to be, it will like automatically correct you and give you a better idea of what you need or what you want. So
yeah.
So knowing like, okay, this is not for me, is sharpening your vision more on like, okay, what I need is this, and the picture becomes more clearer.
100%.
I think it becomes part of like trusting other people as well, because it just reminds me of when me and Bernadette were looking for a house to rent, and you know, we searched about, I don't know, 5 to 8 places, and all of them I went into, I was like, yeah, nah, not really. Like, I was explaining to Bernadette, you know, what I want, what I like. And there was this time, like, I had to be at work, and I couldn't look at the house that we're currently in. And I'm very, like, picky with what I want. But I had to put my trust in Bernadette, and she said, yeah, this is the house, this is what we want. You know, I looked at the photos and they looked all right, but you know, a photo isn't really, you know, doesn't do it justice of, you know, when you actually go into the place and observe it. But I had to put my trust in what I was telling Bernadette, what I wanted. You know, I want a sort of large kitchen space, and you know, Bernadette, of the place, and I'm like, oh, I don't know, you know, I'm not there, I haven't seen it, I haven't been in it. Yeah, and it's putting that trust in someone else. So I had to put my trust in Bernadette, and I was like, all right, we're getting this house, and I didn't even walk into it. And when I opened it, I was, yeah, so just, thank you, babe. I was like, this is awesome, best place we've looked at. Yeah.
And so if we use that example, so then we'll ask a couple of questions and say, Cody, what was the fear? Surely there was a fear behind that in trusting another person to find a place for you.
There was. Like, I thought only I could satisfy what I want. You know, like, like I said, like I'm very picky. Like I want certain things to be away this certain way. I want, you know, an aircon in every room. Like, you know, it had to tick all my boxes in my head, you know, because, you know, you can look at a drawing or something like that and say, oh, it needs this, it needs that. And somebody else can suggest the other thing. And then you're like, oh, well, maybe I think my way is the better way. But yeah, I just had to put my trust in someone else. It worked out. It was awesome.
To add on to that last comment, I watched a video of someone interviewed Steve Jobs about Apple.
Yeah.
And he's the face of Apple, but he talks about the managing of people. He has like different teams doing different things. And even though he's the founder of it, he had to humble himself to let those other people have their say on their opinions and their vision on how to make the company better. Instead of him saying, no, like, you know, this is my thing, like, this is how I want everything, blah, blah. And, like, just have that, like, a slavery atmosphere. But instead, that whole business is about serving, everyone serving, play a part of serving each other. Creating that one vision of how to make the best products that I can give to the world.
Yeah, that's a very good point there. But then, here's a question I have. Is there such a thing as too early to get a team? Is there a point in a vision when it's too early to get a team?
Yes. Like, if you're not... you know, if your foundation's not there and your vision isn't fundamentally in concrete, it could always be wavered to and fro by someone that comes in. You know, if your vision isn't solid, you know, in direction where you want to head, then you're always taking other people's opinions, you know, and changing your direction of where you're going.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that fundamentally, you know, the foundations, they're solid, then, yeah, you'll be listening to everyone and taking everyone's opinions on if you don't get it down pat yourself first.
Then, I don't know if I should go into this, but was that the problem Adam had? Was it? Where he listened, was his foundation not strong enough? That's why he deviated from the original vision that he was thought about, that he was educated about.
Well, when you put it like that, you can say yes and no. Like, yes from what I just said, and no because, you know, if you don't learn those mistakes that will happen, then you won't. Like, you get more knowledge from those mistakes that you take.
Yeah.
You get more learning from your mistakes rather than your successes.
Because you could almost view, because God designed family as a company. The family is a company. You need all different members to make it work. There's a lot of things to get done, and you need to trust, to delegate. You need to believe that if you're not there, someone else can step up and pay bills and do this and do that. Different providers bring in money from different sides. If one was to lose a job, the other must step up. You need different ideas to make the relationship work. It's a full company right there. So in a sense, the first company we should be even working on, the first vision we should be working on is always an internal vision. And so if we see a family as a company and we see the fall of man as sin, so then Adam's company crashed. The company got bankrupt. And I think it's a great lesson right there of what bankrupted the company. It's not the employees or the people that came later on that bankrupted the company. It's you, the founder, who lost track of the vision. So that's why things like vision boards are very important. It keeps you going back and checking constantly to remind yourself, where are we going, where are we going, where are we going, where are we going? Because individuals will always come equipped. They will always come equipped with all different resources, sources, ideas. Well, not every idea is a good idea for you, for the vision. Every idea may be good, but it might not be specifically good for your vision to move forward. And well, then we have to go through a system, a selective system, where we're able to select and filter and see, this is the one that fits the company. This is the one that fits the company. And if you study how companies do it, they do meeting after meeting, meeting after meeting, meeting after meeting, vote after the an idea to skim it down to something that's going to bring forth great value to the company. Well, then we learn great lessons from Adam and his company. Because the vision and the principles, the values of the company was not taught to Eve. It was taught to Adam. Adam got the teaching of what's supposed to happen. So just like another man may sit down and get a vision of where they want to go. Not everybody saw that vision. You are the original founder who saw the vision. Well, then I got to align myself with a helper. I got to let the helper be equal or even greater than I am, because when you align yourself with people, and when we're speaking of greater, we're not speaking of a comparison of talent. We're speaking of someone that's going to give greater value than even the founder gives. And what Earth was giving as an example of Steve Jobs speaking, he had people that came in that were skilled in all things that he himself didn't even know what it was. Well, he had to humble himself and say, all right, let me let so-and-so take the lead in this area and let me become a student and relearn what I don't know. And that's the trust, that's the fear coming in. So in one part, we got to trust in those who are going to be associated with us. In another side, we also got to believe in them. And another side, we also fearing that those who are getting assigned to us may take us away from our vision. Then once we've got people on board, what's the job of the leader? Because I think the job of leader shifts now, because now you've got helpers who you've delegated all these tasks to. So then what is your job once you've got helping hand? Because you used to do 9 out of 10 things, you used to do 10 out of 10 things, now you've got it all delegated. So then what is your job? You are managing personality, characters, you're managing the vision, you're managing the direction, all this stuff. Somebody must stay on top of it, because if nobody stays on top of the vision and where it's going, it will fall. You realize you're moving forward, but you don't know where you're going. And then you get to a certain point and you say, hold on, we've produced so-and-so product. For what reason? Why did we spend this much money on this product that's not going anywhere? Well, why did we do that? We did that because an idea came from here, an idea came from there. We didn't check against the vision. We didn't check against the principles where we wanted to go from the very beginning. And so what happened is we just said, oh, that sounds like a good idea. Let's go. Everybody helped to get there. And then we get there and we look back and we say, this is further from where we originally intended to go. And so the hardest job is not even doing the actual job. The hardest job is managing the people. That's why you see sports team managers as so essential. You could have the same player this year. And I watch a lot of soccer, and my favorite team, Real Madrid. And we've had the same type of players for 3 years, 4 years in a row. One manager came in, we lost miserably with the same team. Another manager came in, we lost miserably. And that manager called Zidane comes in, he wins us the league 3 years in a row. The team is exactly the same. The players are exactly the same. The talent is exactly the same. But we change the manager and the team sees success. The manager is the difference between success and loss. And so people online are commenting and I'm reading and people are getting angry and say, oh no, this manager is not as good as they say he is. The quality in the team was already there. And I look and I laugh because we don't understand the great value in having a great leader. You can have all the skills you want, all the greatest players you have. If the manager is not the greatest manager and the greatest leader among them, success, you will not see it.
Yeah.
And so...
No, I noticed that with my brother when I think he joined a new footy team and he wasn't using him as well, like he wasn't using him where his skills were. And, you know, he went from kicking, you know, 7 to 10 goals a game to like kicking nothing. And that was because just of the positioning that he was in. When we were talking to the coach, we were like, you know, our brother plays like this style, that, and then he took on that information. He changed it, and he went back to the same. Like, but there was also something that the coach said. He said, I also wanted Zane to learn this position. He also wanted to learn like a different part of the game, which is also like I didn't see it like that. The coach turned around and said, "Yeah, I know he's good here, but I also wanted him to learn about this." But yeah, it wasn't his best position.
But that would be good for Zane to learn in that position. So he will have a different perspective on that other person who's playing that position. And so when he goes back to the position that he's really good at, they can work well together now because he has an understanding of that.
And in a sense, that's the beauty of almost starting alone. You learn about every position. So that when you're in a position of leadership, you're not screaming and yelling at everybody. And that's why we don't have a lot of good leaders, because we don't get trained in opposition. You see, somebody, because he's been working in the company for 5, 6, 7 years, they say, oh, get promotion to a position of leadership. Well, he hasn't roamed around and known every position. So if you give him a position of leadership, he has no understanding of how things are supposed to be done. So in a sense, there's great value in starting a vision alone. But there is great sorrow in ending a vision alone. Because he won't go far. And in a sense, we're designed that way. That nothing goes further unless relationship is involved, people are involved. And so our vision, in a sense, almost always has to be submitted to somebody else's vision. Always. Even when you think you have the grand vision, you still got to submit to somebody else's vision for your vision to succeed.
I just found this Snoop Dogg speech, and it was for the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah.
And the rapper said his speech. It was, I want to thank me for believing in me. I want to thank me for doing all the hard work. I want to thank me for having no days off. I want to thank me for never quitting. I want to thank me for always being a giver and trying more than I receive, or giving more than I receive. I want to thank me for trying to do more than, I want to thank me for trying to do more right than wrong. I want to thank me for just being me at all times. And I think that speech made headlines is because it's so to the opposite of what, you know, a normal thank you would be like. And we all know, you know, Snoop Dogg has a team behind him, a team doing all these things, you know, a person producing the music, you know, somebody who might, you know, edit his, you know, raps here and there, or like chuck in a little bit of credit. And I think that speech just made headlines because it was so like, are you serious? But in a sense, this speech is also true. You know, he is thanking himself for sticking to his vision. But we all know that he has a team behind him as well.
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of it, is that I think from reading the speech and hearing the speech, I think a lot of people would take it as, I am almighty. But I don't think that's really what he's saying. Because he goes on to forgiving more than receiving. And he goes on to all these other stuff which involves relationship. And so he knows himself he was part of some sort of relationship that contributed to him being where he's at. And in a sense, I think what he's trying to promote is self-love. He's trying to promote self-love and people not being too hard on themselves and not valuing their own their own inputs and their own hours they put in and their own work they put in. Because a lot of leaders do fall for this as well, where because now I have a team and there's a lot of great people that are coming into the team that know more than I do, so I start feeling inadequate. I start feeling small because the people underneath me know more than I know. Then it's the battle of ego. And when we see it all the time in the team, someone is a manager, you're not supposed to know more than the manager. It's how the society works. If you know more than the manager and they see the manager asking you questions, people will look down on you and say, oh, what kind of manager is this? He doesn't know much. Then they'll look at somebody else and say, well, you should be a manager because you're answering all the questions. Well, that's not how it works. You could have all the answers of every question and still be the worst manager of all time. And I was watching a clip once, I forgot what the name of the man was, and he was talking about leadership and how the team works. And he said, the trustworthy people in the company, if you go to a company and you ask who are the trustworthy people in the company, everybody will point to the same person. And if you also go to a team and you ask who are the assholes, the idiots, the arrogant people in the teams, they will all point to the same person. And when you go and check the performance level of those two people, you will see that the person everybody trusts is not exactly the hardest working person, the smartest person in the team. He could be somewhere in the middle. But the arrogant one that everybody points finger at, he is definitely the smartest one in the team. And so he feels an entitlement of, because I give so much wisdom and so much, I wouldn't even call it wisdom, so much information to people and answer all their questions, I shall be respected. I should be looked up upon. I should be in a position of leadership. And I know when I was working in government, and I saw it all the time, a lot of people claiming they should be in leadership because they know more. But leadership is not about how much you know. Yeah. And this man said something very interesting that got stuck to me. And he said, if you were to take off that person that's the leader, that everybody trusts and go to, that lifts everybody up and keeps everybody going, that trains and educates everybody, though he might not know everything, if you were to take them out of the team, the whole team will crumble. You can have all the smartest and genius people in the team and the team will crumble. Because these are the people that know how to maintain balance.